Welcome back to the Blessed Business Podcast. I'm your host, Hunter Haley, and today I have with me Tony Pimpo. Welcome, Tony.
Thank you, Hunter. I'm glad to be here and excited to talk about this.
Well, good. Well, Tony has been in business for a long time. He's been in various forms of leadership, both in church and in business. He's a part owner of a technology company. He also works as a consultant, as well as many other opportunities and ventures that he's done in different fields and different areas. And so I wanted to have him on to discuss a little bit about the topic today. And the topic we're going to discuss is the necessity of delegation, whether you're in church, whether you're in business, whether you're in leadership, whether you own your own business, or whether you manage a team in another company, because he does a lot of project management and stuff, right, as well. Yep. And so this is an important topic for anybody who wants to get things done. If you're a parent and you want to delegate some of the responsibilities to your children, we don't believe in slave labor, you know, right here for out of your children, but they can probably clean their room, right? So at every level, people delegate. And so being a good delegator is important. So thank you for joining me today to kind of have a conversation about this.
Absolutely.
So we wanted to title this The Necessity of Delegation. Why is that, Tony?
I think the whole point of it really is, and we were talking about this before we started, but creating something that's bigger than just yourself.
Right.
Right. If you have a business or an organization that's just as big as you are, that's all it's ever going to be able to accomplish, and it's not going to live on past you. But I think delegation is a way to expand. It's a way to increase and leave something that is larger than yourself.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, is if you're doing something big and worthwhile that's going to have a meaningful impact on the world, or, you know, financially, mm-hmm. or, you know, from a kingdom perspective, or just whatever cause you're trying to promote, if you're trying to do something big, impactful, and meaningful, it's going to have to be bigger than you, and it's going to be more than you can do on your own.
Right.
And I believe I struggled with this as an entrepreneur in one of the first businesses that I started, that I had a pretty good level of success. I had a web design and marketing business, but I never could grow to past a certain point because I never could learn to delegate effectively.
Right.
Because I always felt like no one else could do it as good as I could, or, you know, I micromanaged and all the things we're going to talk about today that you're not supposed to do. That's what I did. And so, I really think it's important to recognize that, because now I'm in a real estate business and we've hired a couple of employees, and I've got one who's full time, actually your brother, Duncan,
yep.
Who has been a lifesaver, and our company has already grown significantly and we're primed to double in the next 2 years. And that's all due to creating systems and processes and effective delegation and growing the team beyond just myself. And so I've seen it work in my life. And I've seen you, I know you've probably seen this on different teams that you've been a part of and various ventures and projects and different things that you've been involved in.
Yes.
And so I wanted us to have a conversation about this. And you brought up something that was really interesting, a book you've been reading that's more focused on church, but it's really important for a lot of areas. What was the name of that book?
Yeah. So it's actually called Church Work. It's by Rodney Shaw, and it's really good. I read it last year. And it's just been something that's informed my view of these things. And it's really good. I highly recommend everybody read it, whether you're in business or, you know, to expand your understanding of what happens in the church as well. Mm-hmm. So,
well, because it's all connected. And that's right. Here on the Blessed Business Podcast, we understand that there's a connection between business and mission.
Yep.
And doing kingdom work and doing our business and our work, if I put it that way.
They actually go together.
They actually should be intertwined, so we should know the biblical perspective of this. And there was three areas that that you pointed out, I believe. It was, let me see if I got this right, dumping, delegating, and developing.
Yes.
These are kind of the three different yep. ways to offload.
Right.
And so tell me a little bit about what it said about dumping, because I think I know what that means, because I did that a lot. That's how I tried and it failed miserably. So tell us a little bit, what does it mean to be a dumper?
Yeah. So, one of the things that kind of came to mind as you were talking too, is that you know, developing people or delegating things sometimes is harder at first. Mm-hmm. You have to spend more time to communicate what you're doing.
Yes.
So I think at least for me, many times, like I'll just do it myself. You know, that's right. The thing. Yeah, I can get this done faster than explaining it. So I think that's one of the initial things that keep us from doing it. But yeah, I talked about being a dumper, which is someone who you constantly feel overwhelmed, right? And so you're always busy, you forget about your commitments, and then you need to pull others in at the last minute. Mm-hmm. So it's like, hey, you know, this deadline's coming up, can you do this, right? Mm-hmm. And I think all of us have been in that position before, and you know, I'm sure at some time we're going to again, but rather than make that a way of life, and I think mm-hmm. that's where it's really talking about, but you know, it's not being able to say no when asked to do things. You say yes, and then you pass that task on to others. I know, I've been there, but you seldom, you know, you keep that project for yourself. You're always passing it on. And so you don't really end up working side by side with people because you're just doing that. And you may have a ton of things you do on your own, but you're not effectively expanding your capacity by doing it that way. You know?
And I know for me, I was a dumper for a long time because I would take on more work, and then realize I can't do all this right on my own. I'm up against deadlines. And then I would try to go hire somebody. And it was like, I need someone right now. But like you said, to actually properly develop someone and delegate and hand off, number one, you have to create systems and processes. Mm-hmm. You have to set expectations, right? You have to be able to train them and show them effectively how to do it so they can actually run with it. And so it actually, the first time you delegate something, it can actually take more time
right
than just doing it yourself. And so then you feel flustered and frustrated, and the person that you've delegated to feels frustration.
Yeah, especially when you're on that deadline too.
Yes, because it's like a crunch.
Yes, exactly.
Everyone sees the clock ticking, and they're like, oh no, oh no, oh no. It's just this sense of impending doom, right? Mm-hmm. And then you've brought someone else into your...
you pulled them into it, yeah.
That's right, into your situation here. So anyway, so we don't want to be a dumper, right?
Right.
So what's the difference between just dumping and offloading that way versus just straight up just delegation? What does delegation look like?
So delegation, like it talks about, is a great improvement over mm-hmm. dumping. So the premise is similar. There's more work to be done than one person can do alone, right? But with delegation, you allow others to have ownership of those tasks. They're distributed, and also authority, responsibility, and accountability is shared. So those mm-hmm. things are, like for instance, the amount of responsibility determines the amount of authority.
Ooh, that's
right?
Good.
Because you can't effectively fix a problem if you don't have the authority to do so. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are situations, I think all of us can probably point to it, where whether at our business or whatnot, we've been in a situation where we've been asked to fix something, but we don't really have the authority to fix mm-hmm. it the way it needs to be done. And so in those cases, someone can leave being frustrated, you know, with a task that they're not actually able to fulfill. And so I think delegating, part of it is bringing people in earlier, giving them the time, the resources, the authority to do that. And so there's a few rules for delegating it talks about. You want to establish an accountability structure. You want to delegate to the right person.
That's
right?
Important.
Match the task with the skill set. Clearly define what success is. You know, like this is the desired outcome. Mm-hmm. Because many times if you don't have a goalpost, someone doesn't know how well they've done. So you want to remain accessible, demonstrate trust, reward successes, and then debrief often. So that's some of the things that it mentions as rules, you know, for delegating.
Some just general guidelines.
Right, yeah.
You know, I think that's interesting because if you don't do that, the temptation is to wait until you're overwhelmed and then try to do all these things.
Yeah.
But it's hard to do it right when you are overwhelmed. But delegating is taking, like, having the foresight to anticipate, okay, this is going to be more than I can do on my own. And so I need to be able to create some of these things and be able to allot the time to be able to actually hand this off effectively. So mm-hmm. I'm curious. So all right, so that's dumping. That's just normal delegation. So going to developing, I think, was the third category. Is that right?
Yep.
And so what is the difference when you evolve to the developing phase?
So developing focuses on that person, like using those things to grow that person into who they're supposed to be. So like, for instance, it gives a few examples of those people outgrowing their roles, right?
Gotcha,
and moving up, you know, in the process. Being confident that things could continue even if you had to step away, that means some people have been developed, right?
If you're no longer there, can the show go on?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because that's different than just like, hey, you go over here to this task.
Yes.
You've offloaded responsibility. You've shared the vision.
Right.
And so they have a bigger picture view, not just, hey, do this simple thing.
Yes.
That's good.
Yeah. And it takes it beyond just like rules and procedures, right? Because mm-hmm. delegation can be accomplished. You could give someone a manual that says, if X happens, do
right.
Y. And somebody can execute on that, mm-hmm. right? And that would be effective for the most part. But when it comes to making some kind of a decision that maybe is not in there, you know, you developed, successfully when you're able to recreate yourself, so to speak,
yeah.
in this context, right? Because you're the one who had the vision, and imparting that to other people, I think, is part of the development of people. And then also it says you build lasting relationships with those
right.
that you work with under
so
your care.
I guess it would be the difference of, so dumping is like hiring a temp worker to like just come in and like make more widgets, right? Just
right.
step in and like keep the machine rolling. Whereas delegating is like, okay, you've got a team, you've got focus, you know, there's some vision, but it's, you know, it's more of like, hey, we're building a long-term thing, follow these systems and processes. Whereas developing, this is like your succession plan, or
succession.
Those are two
yeah.
totally different things. Yeah. Your successors picking him or her and saying, okay, I'm going to hand this off to where, you know, maybe you're not leaving the company, maybe
right.
you're not leaving that, but you can go on to the next phase of your development.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I'm going to go start another division of the company, or we're going to let you manage this branch so I can go start another branch, or,
yeah.
you know, whatever.
And it frees that person who really is the visionary to think about what's next.
Yes.
Right.
To come on the business, not just in the business.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And one of the things it mentions too, about these three different categories, that dumping spends a leader's influence because the people that are involved, they feel like they're just bailing them out. Mm-hmm. But delegating redistributes that. That's a tongue twister there
yeah.
for me. No. But that is like basically, you know, spreading that out, while developing exponentially increases the influence.
Wow, that's good. Almost, I heard the example one time is that in relationships, think of it as credit, like coins, you know? So if you have a relationship with someone and you have a good time with them, that you say, hey, good job, you know, you give them affirmation, those are putting coins in your piggy bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then when you have to come and correct or like say something that's, you know, harsh or, you know,
right.
going to hurt their feelings, or if you do something like that, then you have to spend those. And sometimes we frivolously spend because we weren't thinking, and we say something out of ignorance and be like, you big dummy, why'd you do blah, 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 when it was really it wasn't a hill worth dying on, right?
Right?
Whereas on the flip side, there are times as a leader, you have to spend those coins and say,
mm-hmm.
I know, you know, like if you're leading men into battle, you know, and it's like, yes, that is a hill we have to charge, right?
Yes, yes.
Well, you don't want to have spent all of your influence coins. I love how it said that your influence. Instead, you want to leave some of those in reserve and build those. And so when you develop people and they see them investing in you, then
right.
that builds that influence. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So I want to, speaking of that, I want to bring in a little bit of a biblical perspective. Then we may go back into some more. I've got some notes that are very similar to that as far as some tips for delegation that we can kind of end with towards the end here. But from a biblical perspective, I think it's interesting that this is not just a modern problem. Right?
Right.
This has been a problem since day one. I mean, obviously, God saw Adam and said, it's not good that he's alone, right? Mm-hmm. He needs someone to help him. He needs a helpmeet. And so that's where Eve enters the picture. And so from the very beginning, God knew that it was going to be important for people to work together.
Yes.
And so because they literally could not have populated the world and grew into the vision of what God had and taken the Garden of Eden and expanding and taking dominion over the world right. If it had just been Adam.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
So the vision, the God-given vision was bigger than the man that God created, and which is really means you have to check your ego at the door.
Right.
Really.
Yeah.
And so delegation is very important. And really to do it right and doing developing and delegating and doing these things, you have to be willing to let people that can't do it as good as you take over. And you have to give them a piece. I like what you said earlier. You have to give them a little piece of your authority
right.
to get this done. Like if they're in customer service and you say, you know, all you can do is answer the phone. And they're like, I had this literally happen like yesterday. I called, for someone, a professional service. And they said, well, that person's not here right now. I say, well, can you help me? And they're like, well, no, because I don't have access to the system. So it's like,
yeah.
Could you have not left, you know, the password to the computer to somebody so they could get in and see the system and be like, it was a fairly simple question, right?
Right.
Which, I mean, I get it. Sometimes that happens, but it was a missed opportunity to develop someone into that. But that's not the only example. There's others like Moses and Jethro. I mean, you want to expound upon that a little bit?
Yeah. So I think that's where like the first initial example of this happening in the Bible, in a way that's really lays it out, right? Is where, Moses is dealing with all of the problems. Mm-hmm. So every single
judging
problem,
the children of Israel.
Yeah.
They had lots of problems.
Exactly. And so, here's his father-in-law. He comes along and he sees that Moses is dealing with these things just round the clock, basically, you know, I mean, sun up, sun down, if you want to put it
out.
In. Yeah, it just really.
He couldn't focus on getting the mind of God because he was trying to settle disputes over, you know, who got more manna picked up out front of their,
right.
in front of their tent, right? Or whatever their issue was.
Yeah, these small things that were constantly weighing him down. And it says that he came to him and said, the thing that thou doest is not good.
Which Jethro is the one who said this. This
Jethro,
is his father-in-law.
Father-in-law.
He's like
yeah.
observing this and like, you're trying to take too much of this on your own.
Yeah. Yeah. And he said, you're going to wear away you and the people with you. Mm-hmm. It's too heavy for you and you're not able to perform it yourself.
It's interesting. You said that the people are going to suffer as well because you are the bottleneck.
Right.
And everyone feels the frustration of that.
Yeah. Well, there's a line waiting. You know what I'm saying?
Line, yes.
So, yeah, you are that. And the thing is, a lot of the issues that he had to deal with weren't issues that he had to deal with.
Right.
You know?
Because there's plenty of qualified people
right.
to make decisions on this. And was it like 70 elders were selected or something
yeah,
like that?
Yeah, something like that. I think that was the original... They would call it the beginning of the Sanhedrin. Mm-hmm. Started there. That's what they would
refer
they had these
to it elders
as.
That were yeah. assigned. Hey, when someone comes and complains, you take care of it. And then I believe he said, if it's too great for you, if the matter is too difficult for you, then bring it to Moses.
Yeah.
So he's dealing with like, you know, he's the Supreme Court, and then he had like all these lower, you know, judges or whatever.
Well, it's exactly, and that's a great example. Imagine if every local. You know, small claims court decision had to be rendered by the Supreme Court.
Oh, that would
you know?
Be, that'd be a big bottle.
Yeah. Imagine how long it would take to get heard, you know?
Right.
And so it said that he chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, rulers of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens.
Oh, wow. So they, yeah, they,
so they really did that in a way that broke it down all the way to a very small level. And so, like you mentioned, when the leader over that group couldn't determine the right answer, he would escalate it up the chain.
Yeah.
And so only the issues that couldn't be dealt with at a smaller level got up to the top. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we see that it worked.
Right. Well, and we see this in the New Testament too, because, I mean, look at Jesus with the disciples. You know, he said even mm-hmm. God in the flesh realized he needed help.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, obviously, could God have, you know, yeah. could Jesus have, like, you know, saved the world all by himself and stayed from generation to generation? Yeah, it's possible.
But that's the way he chose, is to work through
right.
the people.
And the thing is, what God does, he sets as an example. Everything Jesus did was an example.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he chose, and he chose wisely, and like you said, developing, he spent several years developing these people, showing them, like, you know, I can't remember exactly. Pastor Caleb Adams told me one time, he had read a book on this, but I'm going to butcher it the first time, but maybe I can figure it out. But it's like when you're handing something off to someone or training someone, it's like, watch me. Mm-hmm. And then we talk. And then it's like, or, you know, I do, you watch, we talk. And then it's like, what is it after that? It's like you do, or we do it together.
Mm.
Then we talk, and then it's you do it.
I watch.
I watch, and then we talk, and yeah. then it's like you go do it, you know, or something like that. And then, you know, and then there's the oversight from there. So basically, there's a progression of handing off. It's not just like, hey, go do this thing, and it's
right.
like, I've never done this thing, or like, I don't know. And then the leader comes back and is frustrated because they had an idea in their mind, but mm-hmm. the person they handed it off to had a totally different idea.
And that's where some of that dumping comes along.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. And so, but I feel like this happens. This happens in church. This happens in business. This happens in the home. This happens in so many different areas. And we want our businesses and all of our business
yeah.
to be blessed. And so to be blessed, we have to follow Jesus' example in that he picked 12 people to hand things off to. But that wasn't the only New Testament example. You also have the deacons that were, I believe it was, that was selected when all these the apostles were getting
yes.
so caught up waiting tables, and they had to hand this off to people. They're like, we're not even the best people to do this, right?
Right, yeah.
But I feel like that's a trap of leadership, is that you get sucked into feeling you need to do it all yourself.
Yes.
And I thought it was interesting, though. One of my business mentors, Michael Drake, he's been interviewed on this podcast before. He had read a book and talked to his mentor and different things, who was a French billionaire. And what he said is, he said, we're trying to grow our company to X millions of dollars, right? But the people that are here when it reaches $1 million a year in revenue are not the same people that's going to be here when we reach $100 million in revenue. The same people are not going to be in the same positions.
Right.
Because what you have to stretch and develop to such a level to change, the organization has to change so much to go there, that even the leadership, even the founder of the company, may not be the best person, or if they don't evolve and develop themselves, mm-hmm. isn't going to be adequate to be able to lead a company like that.
Yeah, you have to grow alongside
right. your company. You have to grow alongside of it. So he said, we're going to focus on developing, and he spent a lot of time and effort in training and developing his team, because he wanted them to grow as a team so they could delegate more and more. Mm-hmm. And this is more than just delegating. That was developing.
Yes.
And so he was trying to build long-term relationships with people, and he had a very successful company and ended up having a very successful exit at a very good time. And so I thought that was really interesting, how you can delegation and developing, and I like how we're changing it away from just delegation, but really developing
mm-hmm.
makes such a big difference. You've probably seen this in the project management world. You know, there's a lot of just straight up delegation, and then there's some dumping as well.
Yeah.
But have you seen examples of where developing into a role that where they can delegate better?
Yes. I think I've seen examples in all those perspectives, right? And, you know, the development aspect of this shows up when you have somebody who's able to own a project, for instance, able to run that. And I think at the beginning, you get a lot of it coming to you in terms of questions and, you know, trying to figure it out. And I think that's okay and that's good. But you really know that somebody has been developed when they run with it on their own, you know, and I've seen successful examples of that. And we really work to do that at our company, to develop people in a way that we don't have to hold their hand, so to speak. And I, you know, that all that happens at the beginning. That's normal. Right.
But there has to be a progression beyond spoon feeding.
Right.
Right. You know, cause, and that goes back to you, you said it, this was a perfect segue. I've got 10 pointers that kind of go along with what you said earlier, but just kind of as we come to a wrap up here, 10 points, for, you know, how to delegate effectively, if we can put it that way. And that's going to lead into what you're just talking about. But number one is identify the right tasks to delegate. You need to know, as the leader and the visionary of the company, you need to know what your main important tasks are. What is the one thing or the three things or the four things that only you can do?
Right.
And when you first start a business, that may be a lot of things.
Yeah.
And the bigger the organization grows, the more limited those things are, because it's like, well, actually, I'm the only one that can do X or Y, because now you can afford to pay people to do things, or you've developed people to the point where you can actually hand that off, right?
Yes.
And that's what's happened with me and Duncan. He's my right-hand man. But even with that, you know, while he's really good at handling these five things, there are some things at the end of the day, I'm the one that pulls the trigger on certain things.
And so that's something only you can do.
I can only do that. Creating some of the systems and processes, you know, it's not really fair for me to say, hey, I'm going to hire you. I want you to develop your own systems and processes, having no idea how this company runs and what my true vision is for the company. I'm just going to dump a bunch of ideas at you, develop your systems and processes, and then I can now hand off to you. Well, like that's not really fair, right? And so I have to identify the right tasks to delegate it at the right times. Because like when we first started, like I could only hand off certain things. Like look up these properties, you know, look them up on MapRite.
So there's been that progression.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's to the point where I can delegate almost anything I do. I mean, it's almost where I can delegate almost anything to him, and he runs with it and probably does it better than I am. Don't tell him that. But I said that.
It'll be our secret.
He may be listening. But the truth of the matter is he does it and does it with excellence, but it's because we took the time for him to learn and develop. And now we're going into the next phase of growth, and now we're developing those new systems and processes together to go to the next phase.
And you're now in a place where you're thinking about where are we going?
Right.
What's next? Exactly. How do we expand? While before, I'm sure that was always, you know, your heartbeat and drive, but you were more occupied with the day to day, you know? And so that development process has enabled you to think about how do we really expand? What's the goals? What's our long-term outlook? You know, and that's something that, you know, you can't really delegate, you know, that's a huge thing.
The beautiful thing is I can dream so much bigger now.
Yeah.
Cause I don't have the weight of running the company all by myself on my shoulders. So before I always had a dream of getting into commercial real estate versus just doing the raw land deals that we're doing, subdividing property, developing them out, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, but now that I've handed a lot of that off to him and he's like owning it and doing it well, now I can be like, okay, I can step back and actually, you know, look at commercial real estate, and he's helping me with that some, but I know that the other areas are done. So we've leveled up the tasks over time.
Right.
And to where now he can handle a whole lot. So that's number one, is identify the right tasks to delegate at the right times. Number two is choose the right person. This is what you were leading into right before we started this, but is you have to match the task with the skills, abilities, and interest of your team members. Consider the strengths, weaknesses, and workload before assigning tasks to ensure they can complete them effectively. And I think this is absolutely critical, because if you don't choose the right person, and again, not that some people are good and some people are bad. That's not what we're saying here. But some people may be really good at like bookkeeping and accounting and organization and scanning in receipts and, you know, all the paperwork and bookwork. They just love that. They're good at that. Whereas somebody else, they're like, I just want to swing a hammer. right? Yeah. I want to put stakes yeah. in, you know, on these, for these signs.
And
then
you have those creative types, artists, graphic Absolutely. Designers, you know.
You don't want them doing your accounting. No. Right? They don't want to do your
exactly.
accounting. Exactly. So anyway, so you have to match those. So that's number two, is choose the right person. And then number three is set clear goals and expectations. I think this is where a big breakdown happens, is there's a, in, because as an entrepreneur or as a business leader or as a, even a church leader, whoever, if you're in any level of leadership at any organization, you have it. You, what is it? The curse of knowledge is what Donald Miller calls yeah. it, where you are so close to the vision that you just assume everyone else knows it inside and out like you do.
Mm-hmm.
When, and that's what they call the curse of knowledge, is because you know so much about it, you start assuming that everyone else does. And in marketing, he says, you understand it at a 10, you know, your product or service. And so, you know, you have to kind of dumb it down or simplify it a little bit. So most people get it down to like a 6 or a 7, right?
Right.
So they've simplified it, but it's still so difficult that most people only, they understand and buy at a 3 or 4.
Mm. Yeah.
So the gap between the two is the curse of knowledge, of where, you know, you say, well, our product is better than all of our competition.
They're expecting them to know.
How? You know, yeah. what's the specs? I mean, like, how do I just trust you on this? Well, like, we know all the ins and outs or whatever.
Right.
And so I think as a leader, the same rule applies, is that you hand it off and you just assume that they're going to get it and run with it just like you did. But like we said earlier, if you don't take the time to cultivate them and develop them and share in that a piece of that vision and a piece of that authority over time,
mm-hmm.
then they're not going to get it.
Right.
And so you're going to be frustrated. They're going to be frustrated, and it's not going to go.
Yeah. Well. Unclear expectations doesn't help anybody, because you're going to be frustrated. It's not going to get done the way you want it. And then they're going to feel like they were a failure at it. And I think part of the way to get around that is to have a shared definition of what done really means. We talk about that in the software industry. If we're working on a task, we like to have what's called acceptance criteria, which shows this is the definition that this particular piece of software, et cetera, is complete. And so we agree on that before we start it. I mean, you know, in the perfect world, it doesn't always happen that way. Just
that's
FYI.
That's the ideal path.
Yeah, we call it the happy path, or the sad path is what you don't want to go down. But that's the ideal, is to have that definition. That way, once you get to that place, there's no question on what done really means. Mm-hmm. And so with a task, outlining it that way really makes it better for everybody.
I like that. That is so good. Well, number four, we got 10 points here. Number four is provide the necessary resources. You have to equip them. They need to have the tools, the information, and the authority that you mentioned this earlier to complete the delegated task. This includes access to relevant data, software, any required budget, etc. And so I think that one's pretty self-explanatory. If you don't give them the tools and the authority and the ability to do it, obviously it's not going
to
get done.
Or they're just going to have to come to you for every single step of the process, and then it's going to be more of a hassle. You know, there's times I haven't adequately, I don't think, communicated that, and that person just came to me over and over, and I was like, well, I could just do this, right? But I didn't properly communicate the fact that they did have the authority to get it done.
Well, and they didn't have an understanding of what parameters
right, that they felt exactly
in.
Exactly. Yeah. And most people are gonna, rightfully so, they're gonna be less.
Yes.
They're gonna operate in that less than what you outlined. So you really have to clearly spell it out. That way they have those boundaries to operate in.
Right. Or if something changes, and that's the thing about developing people, and this is what's been really neat about working with Duncan, is because we have to spend so much time in developing, it was so wonderful that, like, the other day or whatever, there was a situation that came up, and he says, here's how I handled it. Was that the right way? And I said, that's exactly what I would have said. That's exactly what I've done. Go get it. You know,
yeah.
Awesome. Good job. And so he took the initiative, But I've given him I've given him lots of training. I've shared the vision. We have an understanding of what needs to happen. There's clear expectations. But then also he knows that I've enabled and empowered him
right
to operate within this sphere. So as long as it's kind of like, you know, if we're negotiating on a deal and it's like, okay, our goal is to get 100,000, but 120,000 is where we're going to list it. If it'd be great if we got 120, but we need to get 100, right?
Right.
Anything under 100 is not going to work. And so anywhere between that 100 and 120, he knows he's got that wiggle room
yep.
to negotiate, and I'm going to be satisfied, and anything over the 100 is going to be just bonus.
And you set those, so it's right. not like, you know, he goes completely left field right. with
There's
something.
Rails
There's
on
rails.
Either side.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
But it gives him a lot of a leeway to do yep. that. So I thought that was pretty interesting, and he's done very, very well with that. And so I'm pretty impressed with that. So number five is monitor progress without micromanaging. This kind of leads into that too, is giving authority. You need to check in periodically to ensure the delegated tasks are on track, but avoid micromanaging. Give your team members the autonomy and trust to complete their tasks while offering guidance and support as needed. So yep. you need to make yourself available. That's the other thing is, again, if they need something, you need to be available because
right.
if you just lock yourself in the ivory tower, right,
yeah.
and say, go do the things. Like, if
or if
have,
there's something outside of those parameters that you talked right. about, like, what do I do?
It's like, what do I do? And yeah. then that just gets stymied and it just yep. gets stagnant. And that's just as ineffective, right? So you
yes.
want them to be empowered to do it on their own, but at the same time, you need to make yourself available and be monitoring that. Because when you, and this is a challenge, and I've had to keep this reined in, but there is the tendency when, especially as an entrepreneur who's been overloaded,
mm-hmm.
and the temptation was to dump, but you finally did it right, and you've developed, and you've delegated, and you're like, oh, freedom,
yeah.
right? As a leader, you're feeling that freedom. And it's very easy if you feel very confident in the person to just let it ride. Right?
Right, right.
But at the same time, something may have changed that they didn't realize that wasn't defined in the parameters. And it's like, okay, the new tax law changed.
Right.
And now we have to do this. Or in our business, the land development, you know, the county came out with new zoning regulations or whatever. And so the thing is, if I'm not monitoring that, because I know in the back of my mind to keep an eye on these things, but if I don't, I didn't put that in their parameters that, oh, by the way, you need to look at this too,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And so if we aren't constantly monitoring, they can just be going along with what and doing exactly what we told them to do to begin with, but they didn't adapt. And
right.
so you have to be careful to not just let it ride forever, because then you can run into a bigger issue down the road.
Mm-hmm.
All right, number six. I want you to talk about this a little bit. Encourage open communication. Create an environment where your team members feel comfortable asking questions, seeking clarification, or raising concerns. That's important.
Right.
Where you don't, again, we talked about checking your ego at the door, where people can raise concerns and not get their heads chopped off, right?
Yeah.
let them know you're available for support and guidance through the process. So what do you think are some important elements of that, encouraging open and clear communication?
I think a lot of it is just the demeanor that you have about it.
The tone.
The tone. Yeah, just indicating that you're willing to hear them out and give them a chance to speak. Because what you don't want is just to be surrounded with people who don't actually tell you what you need to know. You know, that's kind of how problems start to develop. When you could have taken care of them when they were small, but they just get bigger and bigger because no one wants to talk about them. So
just ignore the elephant over there.
Right.
Like,
right.
We're moving great forward.
Yeah.
Progress. All these things. Like, don't look at the elephant.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've been on projects before where I could see a problem coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I just was that annoying guy that sounded the alarm, you know? And so I can think of one where we worked on a software development project. We were moving from one system to another, and we just didn't have the resources to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And we were sailing towards a deadline. And, you know, so I kept, we're not going to be able to do this. We're not going to be able to do this. It's not going to happen. And finally we got some help, right? But not everybody's willing to do that. So you have to really make it clear that you want that. Like, if there's a problem, if we're, you know, heading toward the iceberg and I don't see it, please let me know, you know? Right. And so I think that tone and demeanor.
Well, I think also creating helps. Moments where that's appropriate and you give them the opportunity. I know Michael Drake, my mentor, what he would do is I think it was almost on a daily basis, they would do what they called a huddle.
Yeah.
So it'd be like a 5-minute, okay, any problems, issues, concerns, all right, give someone a pat on the back. Hey, they closed a deal. Great. Awesome. Just a very simple. And he would go around, I think he had a whole schedule for it, but like they would meet as a team like once a week. Once a month they would meet as a company.
Mm.
Then they would meet as in like the different departments on a weekly basis as like a check-in. And then they had smaller groups that would meet like on a daily basis or like on an individual basis.
Yeah.
They would check in for like just 5 minutes because you don't want meetings to eat up your life, right? But at the same time, you want to make sure that people have those moments where they can address something.
Yeah.
And he made himself available because he was a busy CEO, executive going into all these things, but he set that time aside so that people knew that he was available and it was a safe space.
Yes.
To raise concerns. He prompted it. Hey, are there any concerns? Is there something I can do to enable you to do your job better?
Right.
You know, things like that. And that builds the rapport and the confidence in your team that they can actually do this.
Yeah, we do that even in our industry. There's a whole methodology behind it. I could go real deep into it, but one of the things is a meeting, like you said, every day called the daily stand-up. And it means, you know, it's a standing meeting, which is, it means it's not supposed to be long, right. You know. It's supposed to be where you say, what did you do yesterday? What are you doing today? Are there any blockers, anything that's impeding your progress? And that the whole idea is to communicate where you are, where you expect to go, and then if there's a problem in your way. And so that's a way to keep connected and to offer that open space to talk about it. And everybody, you know, theoretically, as a team, it affects everybody. So there should be that.
And everyone has
shared.
A voice.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
I think that's good. You know, again, going back to this, and I've always been the visionary, right? And so I struggle with this, is it's I know a lot of people feel intimidated or apprehensive about interrupting the leader, especially because once I've offloaded stuff off my plate, man, I've loaded it back up again. You know, because I've moved on to more vision. Right?
You took on the big things that only you could do again.
Right. I'm like, okay, now I'm starting 3 more businesses I'm doing this whole nother thing. And so I have to continuously be careful to say, okay, is there anything that you need from me? Is there anything that I can do to make your job easier or to get things done? Because I know my tendency is to load back up and be busy, busy, busy. And my team member sees that and respects that. My team does, but at the same time, I'm not too busy for them.
Right. Yeah.
So you have to convey that. I have time for you.
Yeah.
I love that. And that's humility, really, is you don't want to come across as, you know, this person that's like too busy to be bothered.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot of times.
Oh yeah. It's easy to slip into that, you know?
Well, and if you don't provide times for people constructively, they either bother you all the time and so they feel guilty of it, but it's necessity, or they just don't, and they let things just continue and continue and continue because they don't want to, because there's different personality types for the people that are under you. Some will just aggressively come back and back. I'm the kind of a guy that's going to pester you, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, I'm sorry, I just need feedback, right?
Right.
Whereas like my wife, she's the type of person, like, she's like, I really need them to come to me because like I need to address this, but she'll bug you once or twice and then she's going to leave you alone.
Yeah.
And so there's different people that are
approach it differently.
So you have, and if you have that structured time, you as a leader can kind of, you can plan for that.
Yes.
But it also gives the opening for them. So anyway, so moving on to point number 7, be patient and flexible. Well, one last thing on encouraging open communication is take serious people's concerns.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just shut it down like, oh, no, you didn't do that right. Or you're not thinking about that right. Or like, blah, blah, blah. It's just like, no, we're moving on.
Yeah.
Because then that undermines their confidence to approach things in the future, even if they are a little off base or like, oh, man, you could have figured that out on your own. But identify and say, okay, I understand. I hear what you're saying. Here's my thoughts and my feedback, and here's how we need to proceed in the future.
Right.
And if you disagree with it as the leader, well, here's why.
Yes.
So I think that breeds open communication because you're not just squashing every time someone has their 5-minute standing meeting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, nope, 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 nope. Yeah. All right, move along. That's exactly. Not productive either.
No,
right?
And it doesn't encourage anybody to
be open.
No. Mm-hmm.
All right. So now on to number 7, be patient and flexible. Understand the person you've delegated to may approach the tasks differently than you would. They may do it different. Be open to new members. I've got my notes here. Be open to how they may have different ideas and methods and allow room for some trial and error as they learn to grow in their role. When I first had Duncan handed off, and we would be driving in the truck together, headed to a property, and someone would call, and I'm like, you take the call, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like literally over there, like biting my tongue, wanting to interject, but like, tell him this, tell him that, tell him this.
Yeah.
And I've had to learn, just let him do it. He hit all the same points. He just did it in a different order than I would have done.
Right.
But my tendency is just like, I got to control.
Yeah.
I got to control.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've had to fight that. And it is a fight. But you have to be patient and flexible. And you know what? At the end of the day, it all worked out just fine.
Mm-hmm.
It all worked out just fine.
Yeah. It takes some discipline to let someone else drive, you know, so
yes,
to speak.
I love to drive.
Yeah,
I want to be in control.
So do I.
If I could fly, I'd be flying the plane, right?
I'm not a fan of being a passenger, you know.
Exactly.
It depends who's driving.
That's true. That is true. But most people, I would rather drive.
Yeah.
Number 8 is provide constructive feedback. Offer praise for a job well done and provide constructive feedback for improvement. This will help your team members learn and grow, ultimately making them more effective in their roles. So it's okay to be constructive, but not, there's a difference between constructive and just being critical.
Right.
And sometimes constructive feels critical.
Yeah.
But if with the tone and the attitude and how you approach it is different. Being critical is like, no, that's not good. Try again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like it. Those are critical things to say, or like, man, that's ugly. Or like, man, I wouldn't have done it that way.
Yeah. Or you always do it like.
Or yes. You know. Why are you always getting this wrong, right?
Yeah.
So that's more critical. Whereas constructive is like, that's a little different than how I would have done it. I think given the parameters of the project, I think our approach should be X.
Yes.
Could you go try again?
A different approach.
A different approach. This is good, but it's a little different than what I kind of had envisioned.
Mm-hmm.
But I appreciate your efforts. Let's try again. And so if you do that, they feel better about it, and it doesn't feel like they need to crawl in a hole because they were a dummy. You know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, they know clearly where they got off point.
Right.
And they're brought back to the vision of where they need the path that they need to be on. What did you call it? The happy path. The happy path, not the sad path.
Yeah, exactly.
So bring them back to the happy path and put them back on it. And you have to be very disciplined to do that as a leader.
Yeah, and that's hard too.
It is.
Because sometimes, you know, we just don't want to say anything, or I'll fix it myself.
Right.
That's what, you know. Sometimes,
you
don't
want to hurt their feelings.
Yeah, it's like, I'll just take care of it.
Especially if team members are still in the developing phase and they take everything personal.
Right.
And they're like, you know, where you're having to deal with their insecurities
mm-hmm.
through it as a leader, whereas you should be able to just, especially if you've got a very blunt personality, you're like, man, just go fix this, right?
Yeah,
it's terrible.
Yeah.
Whereas some people, and again, this is knowing your people, because some people you have to be blunt with them. Go do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, go do it this way. Whereas other people, you need to be a little softer in your approach. And like, I really appreciate your efforts, and that was a really great way of doing it wrong. But
yeah,
you know, in so many words.
And a lot of that is results based, because
yes,
if the outcome isn't right,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of what we need to focus on. You know,
yes,
it's not so much method, although you know you can go about things the wrong way, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But really, just looking and saying, you know, this is where we wanted to land. This is where we actually landed. How do we bridge that gap next time to get the desired outcome? What do you think we could have done differently to get there?
Right.
You know, and even asking those questions sometimes, gets them thinking, like, you know, we could have done this, we could have done that, maybe next time. We and a lot of times they have the answers, you know, they know, mm-hmm. but not all the time, you know, but right. that's where you, in that conversation, you're able to point those things out. And I think, yeah.
Well, and every time that you provide constructive feedback, that is developing them.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they learn, it's kind of like Thomas Edison, I learned 999 ways or whatever it is,
how not to make a light bulb.
And so, the thing is, they will be a better person for you to delegate to in the future if you tackle the hard moment appropriately. So you the better you handle those moments of friction, the less of those you'll have in the future. Mm-hmm. So you have to look at it that way, where this is an investment into the future. This confrontation or this conflict right now, or this addressing this issue now, doing it right and getting it done instead of just, like, you know, sweeping it under the rug or trying to, like you said, do it yourself or mm-hmm. like, you know, be blunt with them, you know, to the point that you hurt their feelings, you know, because there's a ditch on both sides of the road. You can beat around the bush too much, and you can also beat someone with the bush.
Yeah.
And so you have to find that balance. So, and this leads right into number 9 is recognize and reward good performance. Acknowledge the hard work and contributions of your team members. Positive reinforcement can boost morale and motivate them to continue performing well. And mm-hmm. I think this is, you want to lavish praise, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because like we talked about those leader coins, influence coins earlier, is when you have to say something negative to somebody, you spend 5 coins. Every time you lavish praise on someone, you get 1 coin.
Mm-hmm.
So the negative has a heavier weight to it.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
So you have to do positive reinforcement more often. Now, at the same time, it needs to be sincere, right?
Real, yeah.
It has to be real. Because, I mean, who likes a fake attaboy?
And people can tell.
They can.
You know. And they know, oh, okay, you know.
He's just being nice.
Yeah. But if you genuinely find the things that people are doing well and notice them and mm-hmm. praise them for those things, I think your compliments will be taken sincerely. You know, we have an employee recently that has just done a really great job on a project, and we've been hearing things from the customer about that. And so, you know, we had a review meeting and we talked to him, and we wanted to communicate that over and over, you know, and that's something that I did. I communicated that information, and it wasn't even just from me mm-hmm. because I wasn't even the one directly working on it to see that day to day, but I just heard it. Right. And so I was just reiterating the fact that, yes, this is going well, this is successful. And so I think that came across as genuine, because it literally was coming from people that worked with this individual every day. You know, so it wasn't
undeniable
even just
proof of your awesomeness.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't even just me, you know, saying, oh, you did a great job. Well, I have no idea if you really did. Like, this is relaying information from people who work with them every day.
Right.
And so,
well, and I think that's so critical, because you can think that you're affirming people a lot, but it actually is counterproductive because they don't think it's genuine.
Right. Yeah.
And so that actually is negative. And you're like, well, I tell them they did a good job all the time. But again, if it's not specific, if it's not measurable, if they don't feel like it, you're just saying that.
Yeah.
Then it's actually counterproductive, not helpful.
Yeah.
So as a leader, you have to be really in tune to when there's a moment where, like you said, someone was talking about it in a positive way, a client or whoever, you have to recognize that moment, like, ding, 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 this is an opportunity to learn, to gain influence.
Right.
Points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you have to be mindful of that. And again, going back to Michael Drake and his team, in that once a month company meeting, they had these MVP nominations, right? And so what they would do is they had, I forgot the criteria, but basically if someone wanted to nominate somebody, their name got put in a hat, right? But you had to nominate them. You couldn't just say, hey, they did a great job mm-hmm. with client X. They had to specify
why?
Which core value
oh, yeah.
they
yeah.
represented and why they made the recommendation and what they saw. So one of their core values was serve. Well, they needed to give an example of how they saw them serving, which core value, and then how, like serve, for example, and then how they saw them demonstrating that core value going above and beyond.
I like that a lot. Yeah.
And so people would get their name in the hat, and then they would have giveaways once a month, like, you know, cash or gift cards or different things like that. You know, maybe they get to come in casual on Friday or something. Whatever it was.
Some kind of a perk.
There was some kind of perk associated with it. So what that did is several things. You obviously, you probably wouldn't be nominating yourself. Yeah. So the only way to get nominations is for you to nominate other people. Because if you nominated other people, maybe they'd nominate you back, right?
Yeah.
And so that's how people get in the hat. So it created a culture where people were looking for the good in each other.
Caught doing good.
Exactly. I love that. And so that has a huge culture effect.
Yeah.
As far as that developing, and the bigger the company grows as the leader, you're not probably watching people's day-to-day activities.
Right. Yeah.
So you have to create a culture where we celebrate success and we're looking for the good in each other. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, and you have to monitor that. And so as a leader, that's something that you can look at, and it helps you kind of take the temperature of your company when you see these good things that people are doing.
Yes.
And it creates a positive cycle instead of a negative cycle of people wanting to do the things. They want to get caught doing good.
Right.
So they'll actually do good more often.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What you measure, you get more of, right? And what you reward, you also get more of. So
you're setting a bar, and people naturally want to hit that expectation.
Yeah. That's good.
So that leads us to number 10, continuously evaluate and improve your delegation skills. Reflect on your delegation experiences and learn from both successes and failures. Because as a leader, mm-hmm. you're going to fail sometimes in delegation. I sure have.
Oh, yeah.
Continuously work on improving your delegation skills to become a more effective leader. And I think this is just true for anything in life. If you're not developing yourself, if you're not growing, then the likelihood of your company growing is very slim.
Yes.
If you're not growing in your relationship with God, it's probably actually shrinking. If you're not growing closer to your spouse, you're probably growing apart.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not growing in your leadership skills, your company is probably shrinking.
Right.
Right? And so
things don't just stay the same.
No.
They're either improving or getting worse.
Yeah.
You know,
if you're just trying to maintain the status quo, you're probably going backwards.
Right. Absolutely. Because other people are expanding and growing.
Right. And you know, things change.
In the business world, your competition, right? They're improving, they're iterating. And so if you're not, you're just going to get left behind.
Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to be left behind.
No.
It's a pretty sad feeling, right? Again, that's the sad path, not the happy path.
Right.
And so, well, I think this has been a really good, and part of your journey of improving your delegation skills could be reading that book. It's more focused on church, but it has a lot of application.
I saw a lot of applications in the business world as well. Like you said, there's crossover, especially for those who, you know, have the kingdom in mind, right? Your business and the church, they're supposed to be that overlap where you're having that mission in mind. And so I think just reading that, it can apply in either area. So
absolutely.
I recommend it for everyone.
Right. Well, and two other books I'll recommend is, one is Emotional Intelligence 2.0.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember the author offhand.
I think it's like Travis Bradbury, I think it is.
I don't remember. But Emotional Intelligence 2.0 is very good. I had to read that because I was not very emotionally intelligent. I still struggle with that. I'm a visionary, go-get-em kind of guy, but I don't clue into my own emotions and other people's, which is number two. The next book is Relational Intelligence.
Yes.
Is really good.
I've read both of those. Very good.
Very, very good. So reading those and then your book recommendation, I think, would help people to develop in this area.
Agreed. Go do it.
Go do it. Be awesome. Well, come up with an idea big enough to pursue. I thought this was interesting. I think it was Steve Schwarzman, I think is how you say his name. He was the founder of Blackstone.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, do something big. It's just as difficult to do something big as it is something small, right? But he said, do something worthy of your pursuits, worthy of dedicating your life to it. Something big enough that the rewards is worth the effort,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you're going to do that, you're going to have to learn to be a good delegator.
Absolutely.
And so with that is a wrap for today. Hopefully you didn't hear the tornado sirens going off in the background. This is an impromptu podcast.
We are sheltering in place.
We're sheltering in place here. So this may be our last episode, but hopefully not. But we appreciate you joining it, and be sure to tune in next time, if for nothing else, to see if we survived the storm. I hear I'm going off now. So anyway, with that, tune in again next time. Be blessed. Get out there. Be productive. Delegate well, and we'll catch you on the next episode. God bless.